5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Howdy, Croc Nation. This is your favorite Croc survivorship bus driver, Dr. Tom Ianelli. Angel Santana on the other side of the glass. Happy Thanksgiving Eve, Angel Santana.
Woo! I was just talking to you offline. I cannot wait for Thanksgiving turkey. Can't wait for stuffing. Can't wait for three games of football. But I'm most excited about what we're doing right now.
Exactly. Well, our listeners won't be listening to this until far after Thanksgiving. But let me ask you this. In a mixed home with a Spanish and American home, will you do any Spanish dishes with your turkey?
Absolutely. I am not very big on turkey, I'll be honest with you. I'll have it if somebody, you know, obviously makes it, but I am a pork and rice con gandules, which is yellow rice, you know, rice and beans. Got to have that pork, man. Or ham. Ham is good too.
There you go. All the healthy things. So Croc Nation, this is exciting for us. We're going to finish our sort of, I guess, a theme for the last couple of weeks. We began the month with the knowledge that we have Thanksgiving and Christmas and Hanukkah coming up. So we started with a gratitude, which you guys should have listened to. Then last week, you would have listened to the first part of a three-part series on generosity, which I said was the opposite side of the coin of gratitude. And we had started with practitioner generosity. And I had had that epiphany when I had taken the staff out for one of our field trips. And I was wondering why other doctors or other healthcare leaders didn't do the same thing with their staff. And that led us to last week's podcast. On this week's podcast, we're going to be going in a similar but different direction, if that makes any sense. And we're going to be talking about organizational generosity. And I think you'll have a lot to say about that, Angel, being that we both work in a big healthcare institution.
Absolutely.
And then we will finish our three-part series with survivor generosity. And I have a great deal of experience with that, and we'll share my thoughts. Although, again, there's a million ways to skin a cat. I'm not saying my way is right, but we'll go over my way. And hopefully it will resonate with you amazing survivors out there. So just going back before we go forward, and then we'll tell a little story. Last week, we talked about practitioner generosity. We discussed anticipatory thoughtfulness, the gift of time, talent, and resource, creative elevation, and professional enhancement. And we end it with morale and culture. On today's podcast, we're going to be taking a deep dive on a paper by our dear friends, Raina Audish and Len Berry, who unfortunately couldn't be with us. Raina was telling us by email that she's up to her eyeballs in alligators in Detroit with the fourth wave of coronavirus. And remember, Raina is not a cancer doctor. She's a critical care physician. So I'm sure she is, burdened with all the protective gear and all of the respirators and all the things that she has to take care of. So our thoughts and our prayers go out to Raina and also to Len. And we are grateful for their generosity to share all their wonderful experiences and their writings. And this week, we're going to be looking at healthcare organizations should be as generous as their workers. Again, Len and Raina published this in the Annals of Internal Medicine, published in October of 2020. So I'm going to start with a story. I always start with a story. And I love sports, but I also love history. And today we're going to talk a little bit about the Battle of Gettysburg. So, Angel, you know who won the Civil War, correct?
It's been a while since I've been, but I'm going to take a guess that it was
the good guys, right?
I'm not embarrassed. Give me a multiple choice. It's been a while.
Well, I'm going to give you a little history lesson. Thank God that the Union Army beat the boys from Dixie, because otherwise you and I would probably be slaves in somebody's plantation right now.
Yes.
So the good guys, as I said, won. But the decisive victory of that, war, was the Battle of Gettysburg. And if anybody's been to the battlefield, it's a very poignant and moving experience. And what a lot of people don't realize was that in the beginning of the war, for a multitude of reasons, and I won't get into much detail, and believe me, there are people who are passionate historians on the Civil War, so I do apologize in advance if I muck this up a bit. But the basic understanding that I have is that the South had really, had been really surprising a more superior, numerous, better armed, better equipped army, the Union Army from the North. And as a matter of fact, they were utilizing sort of these little like terrorist guerrilla type warfare, these little small raids and things and winning battles. And they had a lot of momentum. And Gettysburg is a hop, skip, and a jump away from Washington, D.C. And the European sentiment at that time was starting to soften for the South. So the thought process was that if the South had won the Battle of Gettysburg, historians surmise that it would have been possible that the South would have been recognized as a separate entity and may have actually had great access to then gain entrance into Washington, and it may have ended a completely different way. And the reason why I'm telling you this story, not because I need to educate you on history, but the story is about leadership and organizational leadership. The Southern troops had about 15 different ways to win that battle. And each time they had an opportunity to win it, they just didn't do it. They didn't finish. And that was because their leadership, their generals were absolutely not having their A game. And as a result, they let basically victory just slip out. Defeat just slip out of the jaws of victory, and the rest is history. Mm-hmm. And the Union Army won that battle and ended up, that was the high water mark for the South. And I guess 2 years later, then the war ended, slavery was abolished, and we have America as we know it today. But again, it's a story of leadership. Ultimately, leadership will either motivate or demotivate your army. And in our case, Angel, at Garnet Medical Center, I look at us, even though I'm a contractor and you're an employee, I still look at us as part of a great army that, arm in arm, what we try to do is we try to fight disease, and we try to quell pain, and we try to, enhance a person's health, a community's health. And really, that's what our job is. And it comes down to we're limited as a contractor and employee on what we can do. And it's really an organization's, I would say, it is their absolute imperative to make healthcare workers in their organization feel that they're being treated well, that they're being generous to them. And that's what today's podcast is all about. I'm going to start by quoting the first two paragraphs of the paper by Lennon and Raina. Generosity is a service organization's most powerful opportunity to excel. Being generous with employees strengthens their sense of community, security, loyalty, and trust, and inspires them to go the extra mile to serve others. That discretionary effort, the difference between the effort workers voluntarily expend versus what they must expend to avoid penalty, is critical to the success of all service organizations, especially in healthcare. Angel, your thoughts?
I think it's interesting how everything just comes full circle. You'll hear the baby in the background, but you'll hear so many different stories that we've talked about with the healthcare worker. You can't help but, I know you don't want to, I don't want to go off topic, but you can't help but wonder everything that they're doing today. And just like we discussed, with obviously Dr. Lena Audish is in the thick of it. And you're just so proud to be amongst these people when you work in this environment. And that's what I get out of that. Just anything right now, I'm just so proud of all you guys for doing what you do.
Well, I mean, you're part of that too, Angel. I mean, that's why I want to really get your perspective, because, it is the organization's job to make you feel engaged. I had mentioned in that paragraph, in order to gain that sense of community, security, loyalty, and trust, You are that employee that goes above and beyond, goes that extra mile. You could do less and still be, you know, still keep your job. You can do less and still be thought of as a really good employee, but you don't. You go above and beyond. And we're going to talk about some of our organization's methods on how they engage workers like us. Yeah. And, you know, talk about organizational generosity. The second paragraph goes, providing excellent medical care demands the generosity of healthcare workers. It requires us, them, to exhibit emotional strength, resilience, compassion, to prioritize patients' preferences and values, and to sacrifice family time, and especially recently, to assume great personal health risk with the coronavirus, right? Mm-hmm. Healthcare professionals have every reason then to expect their employers to be generous in return and to embed that generosity in the organization's culture. That is, I think those two paragraphs really summarize what the expectation of our healthcare brethren, what we need from our healthcare organizations. Wouldn't you agree?
Yes. And it's also as if it's underneath the umbrella of this whole journey that we're on with gratitude and generosity.
Absolutely. Well, that, yeah, that's the point. The point is these three, you know, these three, I guess, vignettes are about generosity. They're about how medical leadership has to be generous to their coworkers because we're the leaders. The organization has to be generous to its medical staff, the doctors, the nurses, but also, Angel, to you, you know, in the switchboard, to the guy cooking the chicken wings in the kitchen, to Dax who cleans up after us, you know, to every single employee in that hospital. Yeah. It's required. Otherwise, we're just going to be the walking dead. We're just going to be walking around like robots and zombies. And, you know, we're not going to be able to really help people because this is not, we're not serving hamburgers.
No,
I mean, we serve hamburgers in the cafeteria, but that's not what we do in our hospital. So let's talk a little bit about the two pillars of this particular podcast. They're going to be the organization's responsibility to create a community generosity and to create a protective generosity. So let's talk about community generosity first. So let's talk about the 10 commandments of community generosity. So number one is teamwork. The hospital has to put together the environment where we feel we're connected to each other. You can have great players on a team. You could have, as a matter of fact, it's almost a yearly phenomenon where the teams with the best players aren't necessarily the teams that win the championship. Sure. It's because sometimes great players singularly are not additive to make a great team. Whereas in other teams, you have lesser players that don't have the talents as some other teams, but they have an organizational culture and an organizational, you know, data point, or at least, you know, a support mechanism where they feel part of a greater system. They feel they're part of something greater than themselves. And that's the aspect of teamwork. There's another thing that actually my wife and I talk about all the time, and couples and people in relationships, you know, they all tell each other, hey, I love you. You love me. I love you. You love me. Blah, 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 blah. Everybody loves each other after two dates. Right. And although not you, Angel, I've heard all of your bad date stories, your crazy date stories. Yeah, that's not necessarily true for you. I know your wife must love you. That's all I have to say. But you know what's more important than love? Respect. You know, and I think that, Angel, you know, I'm, you know, the medical director of radiation oncology. You're in the switchboard. I am no more important than you. You are no more important than me. But I think we both would agree that we want to feel respected by our organization in order for us to buy in. And that generosity has to engender that respect. Would you agree with that?
I do. I always look at things like a puzzle. And we are all a piece of that puzzle. We fit together because as a team, we can't do it alone. So a puzzle cannot be put together accurately if all the pieces are not a part of the board. And once you get those pieces in, sometimes they'll feel like they're in and they're not, and they're in the wrong place. But once you get them right where you need to be, everything lines up.
Absolutely. Values. We talked about this a few podcasts ago where that was the young security guard, you know, who wouldn't let me bring that gift into the hospital, that fishing rod. You know, his values were not aligned with the values of the hospital. I have not seen him since, thank God. So maybe somebody's listening to my podcast. Here's another thing that's really important. And actually going back to a sports analogy, you know, I love all sports and I love college basketball actually quite a lot. And my team is the Duke Blue Devils. Ooh. And one of the things that I always, I guess, would criticize about them, although how could you criticize a team that's had that much success? But it's a very, very ingrown culture. You know, there's the Duke culture. There's really no other perspective. I mean, you know, the coaches don't hire coaches from outside. They hire their own people. And even though it's worked at Duke, it really doesn't work that way in real life, you know, in outside of those bubbles. Because if it wasn't for Coach K, you know, I'm not sure that model would be a successful model. It's really important to be open to different perspectives, to bring people in from diverse backgrounds, and to be able to be inclusionary, you know, and also to be non-discriminatory. So I think that's very important. Don't you, Angel?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And again, everything we've discussed aligns with how Duke plays. I watch college football myself, college basketball myself, and football. But I mean, I love during the year of the Sweet 16. I love watching just everything as far as just NCAA, everything. I find it very difficult to understand, not to take a little screw to this topic, how it is that people find themselves not able to conform when a structure is in place that works. We always talk about don't fix if it's not broke, but when things are aligned, there's always that tweak that needs to happen because people need to settle in and understand how to conform. Does that make sense?
It does, but I think that if we, you know, we go through these 10, sort of the 10 commandments of generosity with community, I think that if these things are in place, and hear me out on the last five, then I think you're going to have an easier time for people to fit into this box because it's a very amorphous box. It's not a rigid box, you know, because generosity cannot be on the terms of the organization. It has to be on the terms of the employees, of the healthcare workers. So I think that if we look at the last five, which would be fairness, non-discrimination, transparency, inclusionary decision-making and problem-solving, humility, you know, and caring, all of that kind of fits where no matter, even if that person is an individual, you want your healthcare system, your healthcare workers to have individualism. You want them to have their own ideas, but you want them to feel that they're being treated fairly. You know, in your department, and again, I don't want you to comment on this because I don't want you to get fired, but if there was a situation where one of the other operators or the switchboard people were being treated differently or better or being favored, that wouldn't sit very well with you, would it?
No, not at all.
We mentioned our immigrant backgrounds, both you and I. What if, you know, the healthcare system didn't let Spanish people work or didn't let Italian immigrants or didn't let people from the Dominican Republic or from Czechoslovakia or from, you know, South Africa or from wherever, you know, they just said, we're just not letting you guys work there. We're discriminatory. We don't want anybody who's gay. We don't want anybody who's of color. We don't want anybody who's a Republican or a Democrat or this or that. Right. You know, your healthcare system has to be completely colorblind, gender blind, you know, racial blind, religious blind, you know, everything. You know, you want to make everyone feel welcome, and you would agree with that.
Absolutely.
Transparency is huge. You know, healthcare systems, I know sometimes they will, you know, should they keep things from us or not or whatever. I think that's a mistake. I think that in order to engender this trust that we want, this community generosity, I think you have to be transparent. And we're going to talk about some examples of Scott's leadership, which I think was tremendous. So we're going to talk a little bit about that. How about, you know, Angel, if something's not working, I know you told me the story of you and Brian, you saw Brian in the hallway and you said, Brian, you know, we have X amount of operators and X amount of calls, and this isn't making any sense. And he actually listened to what you had to say. Don't you think that if there's a problem or there's systematic error, or a systematic system that just isn't working, you know, it would be great for, like, you know, the administrator who's very detached from the actual war, you know, from where the bullets are flying. Don't you think that they should sit everybody down and get their opinions and see if they can be part of the solution and actually problem solve with, you know, the middle management and the upper management?
Absolutely. I think what happens too is that, you know, sometimes people are misunderstood in the sense of title. You know, you can have a specific job title that most people don't realize you have more to bring to the table. You know, case in point, you know, I've done telemarketing my entire life. I've done phone work, and I've always been known as an operator or a switchboard or a dispatcher. But in reality, I brought more to the table, whether it was leadership, whether it was just the gift of patience, the gift of understanding, the gift of overcoming and horrible situations. That is the key. You cannot, and it goes back to what you said, it almost in a way, kind of a little bit discriminatory. You don't want to make the assumption that a person is who they are by a title. And you have to open the lines of communication because you don't realize what key factors or key players you have in front of you.
Oh, absolutely. And Angel, when your voice goes over the loudspeaker, I mean, you're my friend, but you know, you are decisive. You are clear. You are professional. You never lose your equanimity. You're a very important person and that's exactly my point. I want to make sure the organization makes you feel that way. And every Angel out there, every Dr. E out there, I mean, let's face it, you know, everybody thinks that, you know, if we're reincarnated, we were, you know, once we were Cleopatra or once we were Julius Caesar or once we were, you know, whatever, you know, most likely I was probably, you know, pitchfork and, you know, horse manure, you know, in Cleopatra's stable. That's probably what my job was if I was reincarnated. You know, let's be honest, like not everybody is Cleopatra. Not everybody is Julius Caesar. So I think that everybody needs to feel important. And again, this is important with community generosity. Let's get into protective generosity. Organizations' responsibility to their workers and making them feel protected. So coronavirus, Angel, remember the beginning last March. I mean, getting masks. I mean, there were no masks. There was no hand sanitizer. There was no equipment. And forget about even, you know, as much as I was exposed a million times a day to coronavirus with my cancer patients, but imagine the ICU doctors, you know, that actually had, you know, patients on respirators. I mean, it is the organization's responsibility to keep us safe and not give us, crappy equipment, you know. And when you had said you were very proud of the healthcare workers, you know, Raina and those people that were actually on the front lines, you know, that's to that. And you know, the hospital worked so hard to be creative in getting whatever they could from wherever they can, you know, they went across boundaries. You know, they did things that, you know, is not in their DNA, like, you know, making quick decisions and not having to get a consultant to make a decision. They were basically being decisive and making sure that their employees were protected. You also have to feel protected emotionally. You know, if there's a problem and you feel disrespected or if, you know, because let's face it, you know, humans were not created to really be nice to each other. You know, we all have our own agendas and, you know, some of us are a little bit more civil than others, but really at the end of the day, I don't know anybody in a work environment that doesn't have some kind of friction with their coworkers, whether it's healthy friction or unhealthy friction, or there's even beyond that, very unhealthy stuff. But it's really the organization's job to make you feel safe and to make you feel emotionally and physically protected. And believe it or not, we're going to talk a little bit about money, Angel. I think that the organization has to make their employees feel fiscally protected. You know, you want to make sure that, you know, and I remember during coronavirus, and we'll mention this, you know, to some of the reactions of our hospital or our healthcare system, you know, giving bonuses, not laying people off, giving people competitive salaries according to the market, and, you know, giving them good packages with healthcare and all sorts of benefits like retirement and things, and also adequate staffing. I mean, to make sure that, you know, you're not doing the work of four people, you know, that's important. And that's how a person will feel that their healthcare organization is generous to them.
I totally agree. I remember, you know, financially I was fine, but that bonus that came out of nowhere, which nobody asked for it, never thought it would have, never even, that wasn't even a thought in my mind. We had, you know, I had just had COVID myself. So to get that and at the right time and to be able to utilize that and actually help me, it propelled me financially to be where I'm at today. I'm eternally grateful. I mean, literally put me at a level where I was financially not stressed.
Awesome. So, you know, when we look, you know, there is also a selfish part of an organization where they have to really have, and I know a lot of organizations don't think this way. They really are very short-sighted, but you have to look at the downstream costs of the decisions that you make. So if you feel that you're working in an organization that is not providing that generosity to you, you know what? It's really going to come back. Karma is a bitch. And you know what? It's going to come back and bite them in the ass. Because think about this. With staff turnover, if you continue to have a healthcare environment that's so toxic that the turnover is just so unbelievable, for each physician that you hire and you lose, you're losing $500,000. You're losing hiring costs, relocation costs, training costs, and the cost of lost revenue. That's a lot of money. So if you want to, you know, play penny for penny instead of looking at the big picture or not providing a culture of generosity in your organization, then at the end of the day, you know who loses? You lose. The organization loses. And I think that's a really nice segue, Angel. Let's go through some of the things that Garnet Health has done to try to foster this this generosity, this spirit of organizational generosity. So we have a tremendous amount of employee recognition. Have you ever been an employee of the month?
I have not, but I have been nominated.
I have to tell you, I think you should be an employee of the month. You are amazing.
Yeah.
But
they
have great program, you know, great programs, employees of the month. We have in our department an OWL where we have this big kind of clipboard where if somebody does something great, you what do you say? You hoot out at them. You put up
that's cute.
A little thing out there. You're hooting out at them. You have, you know, great catch awards. So I've nominated staff members all the time for, you know, if we have a miscalculation that somebody catches or, you know, wrong patient, you know, that's caught, you know, all those types of things. I make sure I send an email to quality to make sure that that person gets recognized.
Well, real quick, not to cut you off, but recently you had somebody from your department become an employee of the month.
Yeah, I think so.
Yes, I remember. Yeah. I remember getting this one.
You know what? Every member of my work family should be an employee of the month every month. That's for sure.
That's pretty cool.
They have award ceremonies like the Academy Awards. They have a patient. They have, you know, employee choice awards and all those types of things. And they have a lot of surveys and feedback from our patients, from our, you know, from our clients, the people who come in and out of the hospital and use our services. There's a lot of philanthropy that comes out of our hospital that, you know, may have been, you know, that's supported by the hospital. I mean, you know, imagine, you know, some systems, you know, have a bunch of people sitting down trying to find a family, you know, to give a Thanksgiving basket to. You know, you might have a real Scrooge organization that says, get back to work, man. You do that on your own time. You know, our hospital doesn't do that. They support our bake sales. In cancer, we have the Celebrate Life, you know, the Celebrate Life. We have the Walk for Breast Cancer that the hospital participates in, the Celebrate Life Half Marathon, as I mentioned. So that's really all part of philanthropy. For the COVID crisis, remember all of those, like we had those updates, right? You would have Scott on the telephone and everybody in the entire hospital would stop whatever they were doing. And it would be like listening to, Churchill during World War II while the bombs were going off in London. Like everybody just stopped what they were doing and we got our updates about what's going on, how we're going to be safe and what's the new news and how many respirators. And, in the early days, this was like, I don't want to say it was like Churchill and London, wartime London, but it was pretty close, Angel.
They did a phenomenal job. I felt at peace after even with the bad news. I felt at peace because I felt as if we were not being lied to. Not that I would ever accuse our hospital, and I'm just being very blunt and honest. What I'm saying is that when you typically, in my former past of jobs I've had, typically you get a conference call and they're boring. It's a lot of, pork in the middle. This from start to finish was, you want to talk about gratitude. You want to talk about constant, regurgitation of thank you and the stories and the letters that they would talk about. Things that this is the stuff that should have been on the news. If they could have put our conference call on the news, people would have been a little bit happier and a little less.
No, and I think they did a great job. Also, humility. We talked about humility many times on this podcast. When we would have our organizational picnics, who was cooking your hamburger?
No.
Scott. He had his apron on and he would be.
I did not know that.
Well, the vice presidents. Yeah, they were right there, man. Absolutely. That's like, I don't want to say it's like, Jesus, cleaning the feet of one of his disciples, but it's in that vein, of course. And also, do you know where, and again, Scott's leaving us in a couple of weeks, and I hope the new guy is as good as Scott was, but do you know where Scott parks?
I couldn't hear you. You broke up.
Do you know where Scott parks his
Scott
car?
No, I don't actually.
He parks way further away from the entrance than I do. And that's telling you something.
I remember he did say this. I saw him once and he said that he didn't want to take the spot of somebody that has literally worked, 12 hours. He wanted them to get to their car faster and he had no problem walking to his vehicle.
Yeah, I mean, these are all acts of generosity. I mean, it may sound stupid. It may sound very trite, but believe me, it's not. It's symbolic and it's important. Another thing is, when things were going south in the emergency room, Scott didn't just scream at, whoever his underling was. He basically said, step aside. Everybody reports to me. He took ownership as well. And that's the generosity that you want your healthcare system to have. You want them to step up. You want them to take responsibility and ownership. That's incredibly important. We have appreciation weeks for each subgroup. So, in our department, we had, we have clerical staff, we have nursing, we have physics and RTTs. I mean, I'm going to dinner every freaking week, for somebody who's being celebrated. And it's like, when are you guys going to celebrate me and take me out for hot dogs, for God's sake? And also, most importantly, CME, right? You want to make sure your staff stays current and relevant with what's going on in the literature, what's going on in with all the updates and all the medical progress that's going on. You want to make sure your staff has access to all of that new information. So we're going to end this part of the podcast. I'm going to finish with a quote from Raina and Len's paper. And it's entitled, this paragraph is entitled Toward Progress. And this will be sort of a nice way to put that cherry on top of that whipped cream on top of that hot fudge sundae. A generous organizational culture is imperative for delivering high quality healthcare. However, strengthening a culture is difficult and slow. To start, leaders must narrow any trust gap between them and employees, and always being truthful, promoting transparency, listening actively, practicing inclusion over exclusion, investing in the benefits that matter the most, and being visible at the point of care. They should also empower clinicians to work at the top of their license while using data to help them deliver safe, equitable, and holistic patient-centered care. In service organizations, trust is a precious asset, not captured on a balance sheet. The best organizations make generosity a foundational principle of their culture. They epitomize fairness, kindness, and character. They offer a sense of mission and purpose. If healthcare workers witness and feel that generosity daily, so will our patients. Angel Santana, this will end the first part of the second part of our three-part series on generosity. Any comments before we go on to survivorship generosity?
No, I just wanted to point out that it was a great episode, and I think that we're going to captivate the rest as we move along. But just want to remind our listeners as we conclude today's episode of the Croc Podcast. It is available every single Sunday at 9 a.m. If you haven't had a chance to subscribe to our Twitter account, feel free to do so. We are available at Croc VIP. And don't forget, you know, you can subscribe to our podcast any way you can on any platform. And if you want to email us directly, guess what? We have an email. It's podcast@crocvip.com. You can email us. And guess what? It's not third party, guys. If you email, it's going directly to Dr. E or myself. We will be the ones to respond back. So I will turn it back over to you and let's get started with another episode.
Awesome. Thanks, Angel.
All right. Thank you for listening to another episode of the Croc Podcast. Join us next week as we conclude the three-part series on gratitude and generosity. On behalf of Dr. Tom Iannelli, have a great week, have a great day. God bless you, God keep you. Peace.